Welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for B2B marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Brian McCready, the head of marketing at Adelshaw Goddard, to Helen Braum, who is marketing operations manager at Telefonica O2, and to Nick Medeg, senior product marketing manager at Centrica Business Solutions, about the role of mass marketing in B2B marketing today. Plus, Rob Skinner shares a key lesson that he's taken on the journey to being MD of Scout PR, and Managing Director of Chocolate, Matt Mason, will share some great B2B marketing examples and what he's learned from them. Are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. When I was a marketing tot, I was brought up on the power of mass marketing to turn around and grow businesses. It was mass marketing that could reach a large audience and had the potential for massive sales. But today, the emphasis is on hyper-personalization and targeting. So is there a place for mass marketing in 2020? My first guest today is Brian McCready, who's head of marketing at Adelshaw Goddard. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, mate. Thanks very much for having me.
So why should we be considering the place of mass marketing in B2B today, Brian?
Well, we should probably define what we mean by mass marketing first. You know, it's not targeting someone's grandma in Sheffield or Houston if your revenues are going to come from sovereign wealth funds. That's not what it's about. It just means, I guess, becoming known to all of the buyers and gatekeepers and influencers in our target markets. And sometimes people get a bit confused about the terminology. But you know, you're right, mass marketing has been kind of questioned, even badmouthed, over recent years. Some folks give it a very hard time as we all pursue or advocate hyper-targeting personalization. But for certain B2B brands in certain situations, I'd actually argue that mass marketing is an imperative.
Okay. So what is the role that you see for it?
So you know, it's important to note that there's rarely a single marketing answer that fits all of us all of the time. You know, some of us have a target market of 50 buyers, some have a target market of 50,000 buyers. You know, some of us are startups, some of us are established, famous market leaders. Yeah. You know, some of us have $5,000 to spend on marketing, and some have 5 million. But so there's no one rule for all. And to be honest, if I only had a £5 to spend on marketing, I'd probably take a single client out for a coffee. But you know, there are situations where there is a role for mass marketing. You know, if you're the market leader in a very large pool of buyers, if you have ambitions to steal measurable market share from a market leader, you know, if market-wide penetration is part of your opportunity, if you want a big slice of a fast-growing market, then we should really never discount mass marketing. I think it would be foolhardy to automatically dismiss it.
But why should we do mass marketing?
So there's a host of reasons. I mean, a simple, obvious one is the world's foremost researchers and academics suggest it. You know, Byron Sharp, Ben Essenfield, Mark Ritson, they all argue for the role of share of voice and brand salience and market penetration as a route to growth. They all advocate that in B2B as in B2C. But getting a few bit more specific beyond just what academics tell us, you know, we're all aware that in complex B2B purchasing that there's many stakeholders, you know, influencers and gatekeepers involved in buying decisions. We've got CEOs, CFOs, CIOs, COOs, any number of people that can block purchases. And so simply, it helps if as many of those people as possible know and trust us. It's the reason why brands such as FedEx will always stand a better chance of getting a signature on a deal ahead of somebody like Lucy's Logistics that no one's ever heard of. And it just really comes down to simple maths. You know, basically, the more potential buyers and stakeholders that know who we are, the more likely we are to get considered in the first place and the more likely we are to actually get bought. It really is a numbers game. And we all know that to improve ROI, you've got to do two things. You've either got to get less cost or more returns. And I think it's just incumbent on marketers. You know, we have a choice. To get more returns, we can either try and get more returns from a very small number of clients that we target heavily, or we can get more returns by having more buyers and more customers, which is where mass marketing comes, and the ROI can come from either. And I'd argue the smart move really is to consider a balance of both targeting and mass marketing. I don't think we have to do one or the other. We have to do both. But there's one very simple lesson that, you know, for anyone that doesn't really buy into the power of mass exposure, you know, just ask anybody who has done something foolish and has seen their name emblazoned across the front of the New York Times or the FT or the Daily Mail to see how quickly your world can disintegrate, you know, just through exposure. I guess the famous example is Gerald Ratner, who, you know, the founder and CEO of that massive jewelry empire that made one ill-advised comment during a speech about how crap his product was, and the next day £500 million was wiped off the value of his business because of exposure, because the media ran it. And the simple lesson is mass exposure has mass effects. You know, mass marketing can have a dramatically positive effect on brands.
So that's a very, very compelling argument. Then, in which case, why wouldn't some marketers go that route?
So there's some, I guess, really legitimate reasons why you might not. You know, it might not be the right tactic for startups. It might not be the right approach if your growth plan relies on just a few named business and getting growth from a couple of companies. It certainly probably wouldn't be the approach if you're working on a tiny budget, unless you're really creative. So there are legitimate reasons why it wouldn't be right, certainly not in all circumstances. But there are, what worries me more is that you come across some people in our industry that seem to have a very conscious bias against it. Some people I've heard really slate it. And there's a couple of classic objections that you hear. I'll just run through them. But I might kind of offer a contrarian point of view, some food for thought, just to say, well, maybe these objections that we all hear all the time aren't necessarily true. You know, the first one is about personalization, that we should all be personalizing stuff now. And you know, that's true to an extent. Lord help us if we're talking with an individual company and we don't talk about their very specific problems. But, you know, the Harry Potter movies and Game of Thrones and Fleabag and the Avengers seem to have done okay without too much heavy duty personalization. They just come up with brilliant outputs and brilliant stories that appeal to everybody. So I don't think you have to personalize everything. That's one obvious concern people have. There's other people that, you know, claim that mass marketing is heavily interruptive and that's a bad thing. And I guess they're referring to advertising. And not all mass marketing needs to be advertising. There's sponsorships and PR and other things that we can do. But, you know, I'm going to argue just for a moment that interruptions aren't necessarily as bad as they might sound. You know, if somebody walked up to you in the street and gave you £500 and walked away, you wouldn't mind the interruption at all. You know, so interruptions can be okay if they're fun and interesting and in the recipient's favor. We shouldn't automatically dismiss them. We just have to get them right. And I guess just one more, you know, a classic objection, the one that we hear probably more than any, is, you know, the mantra of we've all got to deliver the right message at the right time to the right person. And it's a very beguiling, convincing concept. If we can get it right, then brilliant, let's do it. But it's worth dissecting that statement a little bit. You know, if I use just a very quick example, say I decide to license a piece of software, let's say Lead Forensics. You know, did I want to license that? Did I want to buy that product because of a hyper targeted piece of content that they just sent me, or was it because I heard five other marketers telling me it was really great and that got my attention? Or was it their CEO impressing me at a massive event he spoke at 3 years ago that really got my attention? No one ever can truly know for sure which one of those things had the decisive effect. All that we can know for sure is that the more buyers and the more stakeholders that you build desire with and you become more memorable to, the higher your likelihood of business. I just think brands are probably going to be a little bit of trouble if you just turn up with the right message at the right time to the right person, only to find that your biggest rival has just spent the last 3 years building up desire and trust with that buyer. You know, you're not always going to get the deal. So I think there's reasons why not, but some of them are philosophical, and I don't think those philosophical arguments you hear against mass marketing hold. I don't think they're airtight.
Can you cite an example of a B2B business that does mass well?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the famous ones, the ones where they really go for it and do market to the public, are brands like Intel or Deloitte, or to a degree, John Deere. You know, I think their public and community marketing activities have undoubtedly been big contributors to their success. But there's a few more targeted examples. I'll just pick out a couple, maybe. You know, there's an agency called Velocity that I admire that they've become famous not just by producing really fab content and doing all sorts of award-winning work that, you know, that had the best possible chance of getting seen in the market, but you know, they're also hugely visible at marketing events by the fabulous Doug Kessler, you know, one of the best speakers you could care to listen to on B2B. And you know, Doug getting out there and being visible at marketing events has made that brand conspicuous and famous. And that's a very, very subtle, well-executed form of sophisticated mass marketing. You know, a more traditional example, you know, insurance brand, the B2B brand Hiscox. You know, take a much more traditional route. They do a lot of advertising, but they do it in a very emotive way. You know, they did a great digital billboard at London's Canary Wharf recently to showcase their cyber insurance product. But it wasn't a boring billboard. They actually, on this digital billboard, showed a live cyber attack happening as you watch the thing. And it was really visceral. And again, it was a sophisticated way of making their point across by one brilliant digital execution. So yeah, there's a range of different brands that are doing it very, very well, I'd argue.
And if our listeners who to this segment have been persuaded by your argument for mass marketing, can you give them some advice if they are now considering running mass marketing in B2B today?
Yeah, certainly. The first thing, the obvious one, it's not about doing targeted marketing versus mass marketing. It's not one or the other. It's about striking the right balance for the two, depending upon your current circumstances and budgets and targets. It's a balancing job. I just argue that people shouldn't dismiss mass marketing out of hand because what you've heard some quite vocal people, you know, shouting about in the market for years. You know, if you're trying to steal market share from somebody, or if you are the market leader, you really should consider mass marketing. It doesn't just mean advertising on TV or airports. You know, that's the right move for some, but not for most of us. So, yeah, sponsorships, emotive video promotion on social media, PR, trade media activity. There's lots of ways into it. I just say, really, to close, you just make sure you've got a clear idea who the addressable market is, how you're going to get their attention, who are all the stakeholders you need to influence. And, you know, mass marketing and brand building are, you know, they're otherwise known as emotional priming. Just make sure we know how our communications are going to be distinctive and hit an emotional chord. I mean, people really do need to read How Brands Go by Byron Sharp, and I'd advise everyone go try and find, you know, Rory Sutherland talking about signaling. They're good places to begin if people want to kind of familiarize themselves with the topic a bit more.
Ryan McCready, Head of Marketing at Addleshaw Goddard, thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy. You're welcome.
My second guest tackling the role of mass marketing in B2B today is Helen Braun, Marketing Operations Manager at Telefonica O2. Helen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit, first of all, about Telefonica O2 and what their focus is at the moment.
Well, the Telefonica bit, for those that don't know it, is the Spanish company that owns O2, and O2 being the brand in the UK, very well known in the consumer market. But equally, I like to think, well-known in B2B. And we operate across the full spectrum of B2B, from small office, home office, through to large enterprises and the public sector. We sell our business customers the mobile phones and mobile connectivity that you would expect from a brand like O2. And in addition to that, we also provide a full range of comms and digital services as well. And my role at O2, I work in the marketing operations team, and we run the marketing platforms and the data, and our job is to activate business campaigns and comms on behalf of the central marketing teams.
That's great. Thank you. So we're talking about the role of mass marketing today. So I'm interested, what's your view? Should we be considering the place of mass marketing in B2B today? Is there a role that you see for it?
Yep, I definitely do. I know it sounds a bit contradictory because B2B, kind of even more than consumer, the mantra is segment, target, be relevant. And often B2B businesses are targeting really quite a niche market. So it seems quite a contrary view to say there is a role for mass marketing or less targeted activity. And sometimes that role might be of a lower priority, but I definitely maintain it has a place. It's always going to depend on your business goals. But there are many practices for mass marketing that are useful to B2B. And in business marketing, we love our funnels. And a funnel does have a top as well as a bottom. So top of funnel tactics really can play a role in helping drive marketing programs for business, definitely.
And so, I mean, maybe you touched on it a little bit there. What are the aspects for mass marketing that we should deploy on a day-to-day basis?
I think there's a few I'd pick out. I mean, I'll start with, I think, search and the experience that customers get when they come to your website. So about 80% of buyer journeys start with online search, and the IIB just issued their recent spend analysis, and over 50% of online ad spends on search right now, which is no accident. Mm. Search is absolutely vital. And I think as B2B marketers spend a lot of time producing interesting and relevant content, so having done all that hard work, just go that extra step and make sure it's search engine optimized and people can find it. And then once they come to your content or your website, which is so vital to the research process that a B2B buyer is going through, just make that website experience as good as you possibly can. Make sure it's fast and responsive, because that's the kind of thing that Google likes to see. And that's really vital to that top of funnel journey when buyers are doing research. And the second part of that is awareness building. So we know it's a relentless fight out there to capture interest from customers and potential customers, and they're much more likely to engage with you if they've heard about your company and they've got a positive perception of you. So there's some really time-honored, very broad-based B2B comms tactics that drive awareness, and they're still just as useful as they ever were. I'm thinking of PR here, and also its newer cousins of influencer and advocacy marketing, which plays a key role, and using branded social channels and blogging to get your content out there. And I think an important benefit of awareness driving at the top of the funnel is if you get that engagement and you do get people coming onto your website, that is an opportunity to build journeys that you can just keep always on and that you can optimize. So most business marketing teams are not huge. You have limited time and limited resource. So if you've got always on journeys that are helping drive demand for you, that takes some of the pressure off creating new campaigns all the time. And it can be a really great way of using your limited resources.
That sounds great, but it also sounds sort of a little bit theoretical. So can we make it a bit practical? Can you perhaps cite an example of a B2B business that's using these sorts of mass techniques well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does depend on your sector and the outcomes you need to achieve. But I mean, one of the most famous examples of B2B creative, it's a bit old now, but it's still a goodie, is the Volvo truck advert.
It's a great Claude example.
It's amazing. I mean, that video on YouTube. So you've got Claude Van Damme doing the splits and, you know, these amazing Volvo trucks. And I think that's a very broad-based piece of content. It's obviously targeting the drivers of commercial vehicles, B2B buyers. And I imagine Volvo also had their commercial dealer network in mind as well. And last year, Ford Commercial Vehicle ran you know, a similar, very broad targeted campaign that was on TV amongst elsewhere, their Backbone of Britain campaign. So again, looking to reach a really wide audience with a B2B proposition. A telecoms example, so a bit closer to home for me, and just one I spotted recently, it was a 5G testbed initiative in Scotland, in the Highlands and Islands. Cisco and a consortium of partners were developing agricultural technology and mobile connectivity. And as part of that activity, they launched an app called Me and Moo, which let people download the app and choose and monitor their own 5G connected cow. And this is any people, not just anyone on the app store. But it's just really cute, really creative, and really attention grabbing. I mean, just a great bit of B2B creativity and a great way of raising awareness, you know, getting that PR coverage. Again, you know, not particularly targeted, but I should think that would have achieved really, really good cut through for that initiative.
Do we know anything about the results of businesses that have followed these mass techniques? It's always difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of thing people sort of publish too widely, I suppose. And top of mind, I can't give you any quantified results. I mean, I guess, you know, we know that fame costs money in marketing, and you know, it seems to be a truism that strong brands who invest in their brand will, you know, have resilience. And, you know, it's the same with that search experience. When you look at the search results, no one gets past page one, do they? And when you're skimming through those search results, you tend to kind of go towards any providers you've got an affinity for. So I think there's lots of common sense that says it can be, you know, it is often going to be very valuable and relevant to what your marketing programs need to achieve. And even if it's as simple as making sure your website is up to scratch and SEO optimized as best as you can, you know, that's going to be time well spent. It might feel like a background activity compared to developing campaigns, but it's going to sit there and serve you well 24/7 every day of the year.
So to conclude, what's your advice to people listening in who are considering deploying mass marketing techniques in B2B today?
Well, I think like with any marketing investment, you need to work it through, think what it means for your business and how it will help you achieve your business goals. And I don't think it's an either or decision. You don't have to be like mega targeted ABM or mass marketing, because both can play a role. And in fact, if they're working together as part of something that's integrated, that could well be a very good way of planning out, you know, both aspects of marketing. So that's sort of part one of my answer. And I think the other consideration is how you measure results. In fact, that links the question you just asked. because looking at metrics for mass marketing, it's going to be different than a lead generation campaign. You most likely may not be able to directly attribute leads and opportunities to it at all. So it's going to need some thinking about what kind of measures would you have in place, and how are you going to monitor results over what time scale, so you can be comfortable that you can see what kind of return you're getting from the effort and resources you put in.
Helen Bull, Marketing Operations Manager at Telefonica O2. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Centrica Business Solutions, Nick Mideggs. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much for having me.
So why should we be considering the place of mass marketing in B2B today then?
Well, I think that, you know, for me, mass marketing is one of those things that I think it's been around forever. It's, you know, I think you've spoken about it before, where consumer marketing is definitely the golden child of marketing, I suppose. And B2B marketing has played a bit of catch up in the past and is kind of coming into its own now. But mass marketing is really sort of more of a retail consumer kind of concept. But I think, you know, as we've developed as B2B marketers, looking at mass marketing and trying to figure out, is it right for us? Is it right for our business? Is something that's worthwhile doing, but we probably shouldn't straitjacket ourselves into utilizing it or finding a use for it if it doesn't fit.
So that begs the question then, is it right for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think really it comes down to who you are as a business. One of the interesting things I think, actually, because I was thinking about this, over the weekend a little bit, is that mass marketing might be one of those things that works for businesses that have a strong consumer arm. So if you think of brands like, you know, Apple or British Gas or something like that, where they have strong consumer arms that build loyalty with consumers through the iPhone, etc., there's probably a halo effect that sort of blends or bleeds into that for B2B, where it's front of mind for a business when they're thinking about, oh, who am I going to go with for my business package on my mobile phone, for example. So you end up with this kind of not necessarily B2B marketing doing mass marketing, but benefiting from that when it's done for the consumer associated with that brand.
That's an interesting theory. So can you then give an example of a B2B business that does mass well? I mean, is it Centrica Business Solutions by any chance?
Well, again, I think the definition around mass marketing for business kind of becomes the important bit here, really.
Like, okay.
We have a large database of contacts in our CRM, obviously. And we send an email to them once a month that's kind of essentially a newsletter that talks about some of the products that we've got, some of the latest blogs or news that's happened with us, some of our thought leadership, etc. Now, that email, you know, goes out to however many thousands of people, I'm not entirely sure, and has an open rate of about 20-25% month on month, which is not outrageously good, but it's still pretty good. Now, that is kind of mass marketing, I suppose, to a certain degree. Is it, you know, billboards at the airport talking about our solutions and products? Not really. But within the context and the confines of who we are, it's probably the closest we get to mass marketing. Mm. I think that some of the, you know, you see those kind of billboards at the airport, for example, for say like the BPs of the world talking about and doing their mass marketing around their sustainability push, etc. I suppose you do have to wonder, is that building the brand and getting it in front of the people that you want it to? The old idea about, you know, it's only businessmen that fly in the middle of the week or something, I'm not entirely sure is as accurate as it used to be.
Certainly not accurate at all at the moment.
Well, no, absolutely not. No. So I don't know. I think mass marketing is one of those weird things for B2B marketers where it takes a lot of money to do it really, really well. And the benefits that come out of that, if you don't have highly transactional business products, are probably difficult to quantify.
So let's come on to results then. What sort of result can I expect to achieve from mass marketing in a B2B context?
So I think for me, it's really around brand, that sort of brand level, brand awareness, brand recognition. I think, you know, from a results perspective for B2B, anything that you can do in that space can make a big difference. I don't think, you know, sorry. I think for us, like Centrica Business Solutions, we're selling energy solutions to large energy users, so big businesses, etc., or businesses that are spread all over, like, you know, gyms or supermarkets and things like that. Now, I can't see how mass marketing could really get the attraction of an energy manager sitting in an office, looking at how am I going to reduce the energy spend at our 50 supermarkets around the UK. But what it can do, I think, is enable them to, when they receive a piece of marketing or they see something on LinkedIn or they see a display ad or something like that, to recognize the brand and make a connection between what they might have seen on the side of a bus or something like that. But I still think, you know, especially when we're trying to sell to larger, you know, more complex businesses, that and we've moved to the, you know, sort of the extreme away from those transactional sales that can be done quickly and easily, that the usefulness of mass marketing as sort of a lead gen and a revenue generating tool does decrease.
So if I were to ask you for some advice to listeners who are considering running mass marketing in B2B today, I guess you're going to say use it for brand.
Yeah, I think so. Unless you are selling something that is, you know, easily transactable, I think for me, just some of the better examples of mass marketing for B2B could be things like, you know, management consultancy services and things like that, where it's all about you building that credibility and stuff. But even those kind of things, I think, are very brand focused at the end of the day. Mass marketing just doesn't, you know, you just can't sell complex solutions to complex businesses the way you sell a Mars bar or something like that.
That's a great soundbite on which to end. Nick Madegs, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Centrica Business Solutions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Time to look at another marketing career journey now. My next guest is Rob Skinner, who is MD at Scout. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Hi.
So what's made you the brilliant B2B marketer and communicator that you are today?
Oh, right. Well, I don't think I'd ever describe myself as brilliant, but I'll give it a go. So there's three things I've pulled out here. So I'm going to just talk through each one in turn.
Okay.
The first thing for me is the importance of being agile and opportunistic in whatever kind of aspect of B2B marketing you're working in. I think it's really important to remember that, you know, we're not rocket science or brain surgeons. You know, we're marketers. We're doers, and working both hard and smart to me is absolutely key to success. So some of the things I mean by that are, you know, refusal to give up when things don't work first time. Finding the interesting in anything, but also finding ways that work in different situations. You know, we're constantly faced with, you know, different business relationships. You know, certainly, you know, if you're working in agency, you're working with many different clients, or if you're working in-house in a large organization, you're working with, you know, many, many different personalities. So you have to be quite agile and opportunistic in the way that you approach your work in order to meet the needs of the job. But also I think, you know, you need to force yourself to dig deeper than may often feel comfortable at times. And certainly this was a sort of point of realization for me probably earlier on in my career, that, you know, it wasn't just about ticking a box. You know, to do a really, really excellent job, you know, in B2B, I think you need to actually, you know, think outside the box and think differently about stuff, and, you know, and try things that, you know, potentially are kind of outside of your comfort zone.
Okay.
So I think, you know, a good example of that I can convey is, you know, working in B2B comms, my background is very much in PR. So, you know, we talk a lot in our agency about having a stories mindset and always looking for the opportunity and the story in everything. And I think whether your job is to kind of uncover stories and tell stories on behalf of clients, or whether it's, you know, something else, I think that inquisitiveness is a big part of what I'm talking about, because, you know, you have to find something unique and different, something that isn't just bland. You know, whether you're building a campaign or whether you're, you know, looking at a way of communicating something internally to staff or whatever it is, you know, there's no great dark art to our jobs, but it's about challenging yourself a little more and not just taking, you know, the obvious face value answer to stuff. So that's number one.
Okay. What's number two?
Number two is thinking beyond marketing. So I think when we all enter the sort of the world of B2B, B2B marketing, it's very, very easy to think, oh, well, you know, we're marketeers. You know, we may have come from an academic marketing background. And actually, I think the academic process is a bit the wrong way around, in that we should all learn about business first, because ultimately we're business people, and you kind of learn that along the way. Mm. But you really have to understand the business that you're representing or targeting, and understand how it ticks, you know, what relationships it needs to build or what it's trying to achieve in order for you to play a part in that. I think it's obvious, you know, I've got a couple of decades plus years experience behind me now, so it's obvious to me now. But when you kind of earlier on in your career, I think you see people who are very, very focused in on marketing theory without necessarily fully realizing where it fits in the wider business or why they're doing it. That business understanding to me is how you learn to build, for example, an effective strategy, or it's how you personally learn to convince others of your value as a person or as a, you know, a B2B practitioner by showing, by being able to demonstrate the value that your idea is going to deliver back to the business, not just to a, you know, a marketing metric and that kind of thing. Mm. And I think that kind of business understanding is definitely a big differential step up for people when they're, you know, going through their career progression in B2B. Certainly okay. For me, it was kind of a bit of a realization or eye opener. Mm. And lastly, learning, if you're not already, learning to be a people person, which again goes to, I've mentioned business relationships a couple of times already, but it going back to that point again, your personal ability to build business relationships is absolutely key. And okay, this isn't just about being successful in B2B marketing. I'm quite naturally introverted. So when I started my career, I found that aspect of the job quite difficult because I was kind of in a way in an agency competing with a lot of extrovert, you know, loudmouth type people. Nothing wrong with them, I hasten to add, but they're very good at getting their words out more quickly, you know, getting the ideas out there without actually necessarily having, you know, processed or internalized what they're actually saying, and, you know, good on them. But for me, that was quite a tricky challenge. So I kind of learned to be a people person by finding my own way, you know, by being the introvert and the thinker and, you know, giving people value in a different way, but, you know, learning to play to your strengths in that regard. So I think, you know, I suppose the point I'm making is that whatever type of person you are, and there are a lot of different types of person who add value in B2B marketing, it's about not trying to just be the natural extrovert or, you know, the obvious candidate, but, you know, being what you're strong at. Mm-hmm. And delivering value to other people in that regard. So that,
I think you've picked three really interesting skills there, because so you've got kind of agility, you've got kind of thinking outside of marketing, and you've got people skills. Are they skills that can be learned through anything other than experience? How can people go about acquiring these skills?
Yeah, so you've kind of. Well, you've answered my next question. In that, then obviously they're not textbook or classroom learnings. And I mean, for me, I mean, I did a degree in PR, so I did very much a vocational, you know, marketing degree. But I really, you know, I feel I learnt everything from the first day I started work. Mm. I think there are ways you can learn. It's not just about experience. So, for example, observation. I think, you know, powers of observation are massively important. You know, in any B2B marketing job, you're surrounded by other people from other backgrounds, diversities, hierarchical levels, you know, so you should always look to learn from them, those people, rather than necessarily seeing them as threats because they might do something better than you do currently. But you can seek to emulate them. You know, you can ask people to act as mentors to you in particular areas. You know, so I think observational power is definitely a way you can learn. I think also, you know, going back to the point about understanding the business, you know, we're all sensory beings and we need, you know, you need to use those senses to immerse yourself in the business that you're working in and not be afraid of that. You know, we can all read, listen, watch. We've got, you know, absolute wealth of information out there at our disposal these days. So learning about the business, you know, creating your own definitions and understanding of what the business you're representing or working for does, is not actually that hard. And I think it's going through that thought process again in your head in the way that works for you is really important, because for one person, it might be about describing the business very technically. For another person, it might be boiling it down to simple analogies and that kind of stuff. But whatever works for you, understanding that business and being able to kind of articulate that back to other people will help you put the jigsaw pieces together. So, you know, always be on a sort of quest for knowledge, search for knowledge, I think, in terms of that understanding. And then the third area is kind of understanding. So I've said seek to understand yourself. You know, really important to look in the mirror. So again, going back to my point about becoming a people person or learning how to kind of articulate with others, it's really important that you understand your own strengths and weaknesses and kind of face up to that, because, you know, everyone should always play to their strengths rather than try and be somebody else. You know, you can actively seek rounded feedback as part of appraisals, for example, and act upon that feedback. So, you know, what do you need to focus on changing the most in the way you work? Even, you know, it sounds a bit cheesy and cliched, but, you know, take an online personality test, learn about what personality fit you are if you don't already know, because that'll help you to focus on the things that you need to do, you know, to kind of, I guess, broaden your sphere of influence as a person, rather than just kind of thinking, well, I don't work that way, so that's not for me, I'm going to take this channel or this route. So yeah, they're all things that are, they're more about self-learning, and I think techniques rather than sitting down in a classroom, obviously that kind of stuff is important too, but for me, a lot of what we do in B2B marketing is about learning on the job.
Great advice. Rob Skinner, MD at Scout, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Time for a great B2B marketing piece or campaign now, from Matt Mason, who is Managing Director of Chocolate. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave.
So, great B2B marketing. What's caught your eye?
I'm going to go back a few years. A lot catches my eyes. We are bombarded by a lot of consumer work all of the time. And I guess it's harder to find a lot of the B2B stuff because for obvious reasons it is hidden behind closed doors. But certainly some of the property stuff that I've experienced in the past, I've actually talked about with you before on one of these. There was a campaign, it was a marketing suite for Queen Caroline Street. I'm going to big up another agency here, which I'm not ashamed to do at all. It's all good for us all to give each other
a
round.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, and this was a few years ago too, but this is Siren Design, who put together an award-winning campaign for One Queen Caroline Street, which pushed the boundaries for us and really opened our eyes as to what can be achieved within what you would have thought was a fairly uninteresting space, and has been quite an uninteresting space for years and years and years. And you're starting to see some very exciting things happen there. So they turned it into a story, something very credible, something very believable, straight to the point, but did a kind of a walk around of the office with different design pieces, all of which were a cue to a conversation for agents to walk them around. So nothing stereotypical about that. They were also one of the first to introduce the Google headset for the VI. It was just a very, very simple, straight to the point, no messing about marketing campaign.
So tell me because you mentioned lots of different facets of that. It's simplicity, it's storytelling, the new tech. What is it that kind of really resonates with you, that really impresses you, that means that, you know, you're still talking about this a couple of years on?
You know what I'm going to say. Well, number one, you don't win awards because the campaign was rubbish, and it wasn't in the slightest. The storytelling element of that campaign, I'm very Stone Age. I just believe that brands with personality sell better. Pretty much like our conversation around client relationships. If I feel like this brand is someone I want to be associated with, I'm much more likely to be engaged. And it just makes that whole sales process easier. So the Stone Age, the telling stories around the campfire. If you tell a long story and you ramble, you lose your audience and they'll fall asleep. If you get straight to the point and you make it engaging and you put enough punch points in there, you've captivated your audience and they will tell that story for years and years and years. It's actually interesting. to hear an old story well told. And, you know, you've got to have the right storyteller as well, which is what differentiates agencies. But that's what I love. It was bringing storytelling. There's something more than just an office space here. It's a place. It's a place that they created, and they pulled out all of these interesting facets. They did their homework. They found out who'd been there before, you know, what the connectivity was, why you should move here, built a little bit of emotion around it. It was just very, very clever.
And how would you say you've applied that storytelling technique to your own work?
My background's big ad agencies, so that was in my blood. From a very young age, I have a family who are in big ad agencies still to this day. I think we've applied that. We're not just a design agency. We will, if we feel it's right for the design of a brand, do a typographical execution, if we feel it's right, if that conveys the right message. But I would say 99% of our brands have an idea to them. They have something that you can dig deeper into. We write elevator pitches now, and we use a process so that you can tell it very, very quickly, which I should learn to do about my own agency, Dave. So we'll do floors 1 to 5. We then do floors 1 to 20. We then do floors 1 to 40. You've got to find a big building to do that in. But what that enables us to do is then apply that to customer journey and find the right time and the right place to use each of those pitches. So where I get a chance to expand, I've got that written down. I can expand on it, but you need to be able to tell your story in a nutshell. So I think by looking at other people's work, we've seen what can be applied. It's often budget related where you can and you can't. But I'd cite an example we did for LCR. We have just designed their marketing suite, which is under the railway station at Waterloo. And it was the most incredible space. I've just never seen anything like it. It felt like a cathedral. We were delivered with 3 rooms and asked to create some kind of a journey. Now, they'd seen our work before, knew that we could put a story into it. And there's a fascinating story behind the South Bank. So we did exactly what Siren Design did. We went and we researched the area and found out some wonderful things, amazing statistics, but whittled out the stuff we don't need to say. And we created a timeline, which we got artists to hand paint a timeline which weaved its ways through ceilings and walls. Given 3 rooms, we then divided it into past, present, and future. Now, the past told the story of Waterloo, what had happened there, incredible creative hub, just the most diverse place. And then the middle room did the present, which is the retail opportunity at waterloo.london, which is, in essence, it's a shopping centre, but it's very high end. Amazing footfall, 130 million passengers, I think, are going to travel through there every year. That's big footfall for a shopping centre, as you know. And then the last was the future. If you know you come on board, this is what you can expect. These are the kind of levels. And that timeline then weaved its way back as a journey, so in and out. So we created a seamless journey with a story and found a really clever, creative platform to base the whole thing on.
Matt Mason, Managing Director of Chocolate, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Brian McCready, Helen Braum, Nick Medeggs, Rob Skinner, and Matt Mason. And thanks to you for listening. Please do let us know what you thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review, or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've got something interesting, practical, and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no pitches, presentations, or promos, please. We're interested in your thinking and your practical examples. If you have enjoyed the podcast, why not look out in your area for Business Marketing Club mentoring, thought leadership, and events for the business marketing community? Hope to see you again. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks for listening and take care.